From reviews to rankings, The Big Picture is all things movies. From in-depth analysis of the latest flick to sit-down interviews with some of the biggest movie stars and filmmakers on the planet, Sean Fennessy and Amanda Dobbins have got you covered. Check out The Big Picture on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles, from executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
I need sports to have to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan and I am an editor at TheRinger.com, and joining me on the other line, the Panicmeister cooking up his sweaty spaghetti, it's Andy Greenwald!
I gotta ask you, before we start, do you need me to hold the scepter?
Oh my god.
Do you need me to?
Oh, Andy, what's going on? We're here. It's Sunday night. We're here to talk to you about the most recent episode of Succession. We finally got our Super Bowl, the shareholders meeting. Greenwald, we can jump in here. I thought that this was subtly a slapstick episode of Succession. A lot of running from one room to another, a lot of jumping on the phone, a lot of kind of slipping on the old maybe metaphorical banana peels, going a little piss mad. And it kind of reminded me of the early, like immediately post-stroke Logan episodes of Succession. It was
right.
I actually thought that the some of the one-liners were like self-consciously strained because of the amount of strain that the characters were under. Because obviously, this was a very like definitive day for these characters. What'd you think of the episode? I believe it was called "The Retired Farmers of Idaho" or something.
I love. First of all, I think you've made a great observation, because I think that's a sign of familiarity with a show and writers' familiarity with the characters, that there is A-plus Roman Roy one-liners when he is feeling good, when he's feeling confident, when Jerry's given him a loving motherly stare. And then there is B-minus, C-plus, I'm actually having a nervous breakdown, even though it's not cool to have a nervous breakdown, Roman Roy scatological insults. And those land in a different way. And we got more of that in this episode. I was thrilled. It's interesting you say it reminded you of early Succession. I think that in some ways I agree with you. In other ways, I think it could only be later Succession, because when you are orchestrating and conducting a symphony orchestra like this at such a high pitch, the mastery of each instrument really matters. So, you know, just the little things that help sustain the episode, even, you know, and carry you through its often frantic tone, are the little things like, oh, what's Carl going to actually do here? Well, of course, he's going to take the cowardly way out and put it on Frank. Like, those little beats of familiarity and knowledge are what carries us through. What it reminded me of, and this is no less of a compliment, I think, it reminded me of the last act of Michael Clayton. Like, I just feel like Tilda Swinton washing the pits in the hotel bathroom core was that rich, heady aroma was suffused through this episode. There is something so just titanically shitty in the best possible way for the fates of nations to be decided by dopes and pleated suits with lanyards in Midtown hotels. Like, just the absolute soul-killing, anodyne mise-en-scene of the episode was tremendous. And it was, you know, again, like, this was probably because of all the isolated spaces, you know, shouts to the COVID coordinator, but also it made sense.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, this was the perfect place for such an insane episode to be, for it to take place in.
So, you know, the it's a criticism that's levied at Succession. It's a question that's levied at Succession, which is, are these good people? Which we know they're not. But this episode actually asked a somewhat newer question, which is, are these people bad at their jobs? You know, which I think it was kind of fascinating to watch. Even someone like, say, the Stewie character, who always has the right thing to say, is always impeccably dressed, is always sniffing at the rosemary after the perfect bite of cheese, has the, you know, always the best burns of Kendall. And when you finally get behind the velvet rope into the VIP section, you've got a vegetable in a wheelchair in Sandy. His daughter, who is either listening to him or pretending to listen to him.
Also named Sandy.
Yeah,
just right. Bravo.
And Stewie, who is like, I don't really have any control here. You know, like, I don't want us to go to a vote. But, you know, as Kendall points out, that side of things is their finances are unstable. And if it's an increasingly expensive negotiation, and he doesn't really have anything to contribute when it really gets down to like what Sandy wants versus what Logan wants. It's only those two people that matter. So everyone else is spinning like a top, trying to make just a little bit more sunlight hit them on their way down.
The show is many things, but it is consistently such a brilliant and savage indictment of the meritocracy myth in America, or certainly in global capitalism. And I think that what we saw really reflected in this episode is, look, Logan is exceptionally good at being what he is and has been, and has an impeccable track record of fighting and stabbing and backstabbing and clawing his way to the absolute top of the global media food chain. He is a mean, savage bastard, right? And that would be a point of pride for him. And he clawed himself out of Dundee, Scotland, and he did all of this. Mm-hmm. All of those billions of dollars he built. He made that. There is no one else in his orbit that has made anything. Tom hasn't even made toilet wine.
Right.
And I'm not going to that place of like, you know, well, unless you make something with your own hands in your wood shop, you are not a competent person. But that
you and I work in a wood shop in a way
of ideas. The forge is just the brain pan
for tradesmen.
Totally takesman. The scramble to find purchase when their only ground is taken away from them was what was so incredible. The way everyone scattered like bugs. Basically, the sudden realization that maybe Logan doesn't know what he's saying, that maybe he is non.
And how long has he been piss mad for?
And how long has it been? Because they are willing to do anything and take any risk as long as he's there. And that moment afterwards, when they're just absolutely white face petrified at what they're going to do without him, you know, and it's not just in that A plot, you know, I think that the very smartly observed and very cleverly inserted B, or at this point C plot, of Greg and Grandpa, maybe the best grampers in the world. Not a hugger.
No.
Not a hugger is our Uncle Ewan. When he's basically like, I don't like what this has done to you, what's metastasized inside of you, I'm giving my money to Greenpeace. And that's maybe a good choice. You know, I feel like that's maybe fine. That I think that's probably okay. They don't know what to do with everything they've inherited, and other than protect it, and for what end?
I can run through the plot recap of this episode in case people just want to hear it laid out for them. It's the big day. The Waystar Royco shareholders meeting, and the final showdown between the various factions of the Roy family and the insurgent investor group led by Sandy and Stewie. The two sides are negotiating a settlement, but can't agree on certain concessions, including board seats, private jet usage, familial succession plans. Sandy is in a near vegetative state, so his daughter is conducting the negotiations for him along with Stewie, and there's a nice symmetry between two ailing fathers and two upstart daughters here. As the day winds on, there are casualties, including Kendall's rabbit, Logan's urethra, Greg's inheritance, and Shiv's career prospects. That doesn't even get into the nitty-gritty of each scene, but that is essentially what happened in this episode.
I do want to pause just for a moment to say that one of the things that I'm realizing is that by recording early, because you and I are talking about this episode that we've seen early, we're recording Friday, you will be listening to this Sunday night or Monday or even Tuesday, we are ahead of the discourse, yes, but we were also ahead of the fact checking. And so, for example, last week you and I had a good bit of fun playing Where in the World is
Josh
Adrian
Aronson.
Brody's
yeah.
Sweater vest. And thank you to literally everyone on the internet for sending us the information. It was a started as a trickle and ended up as a raging stream. Shouts to Logan's urethra.
People just want to be helpful.
That's the thing about the internet. I appreciate that. But what I wanted to say was, for example, I am genuinely curious about Larry Pine's health and well-being and condition in playing this part. Beloved theater actor, love him on the show. I imagine that there will be articles out Sunday night being like, Larry Pine was ailing, or they chose to put him in this direction or something. We don't know the answer to that. So I'm just throwing that out there. No need to tweet at us the answer. We will find it, but yeah. I am curious.
Yeah, that's a good point. We can talk about the Sandy and Stewie of it all, but I thought maybe we could start with a conversation about Shiv, because I think this has been like a bad 2 weeks for her. It's been a tough 2 weeks for her, as like just as she was installed at the beginning of the season into this role as Logan's eyes and ears and the real sort of head of the company outside of Jerry. You know, the last episode, she gets carved out of a couple of meetings, of a couple of calls. She seems to overreach a bit and get pushed back by Logan. And then in this episode, she does a lot of maneuvering and a lot of work. And then Logan essentially humiliates her in front of everybody and sort of bats away the idea that she would get a board seat here. What did you think of this week in terms of how it worked out for Shiv?
It's been a brutal run, and I think it's been a fascinating choice by the show. I think we talked about this in the season premiere, that anyone tuning into the pilot a couple of years ago might have assumed that the show would have been lazier than it is, and how, oh, well, the young woman is actually the smartest and the most capable and is being overlooked by the patriarchy and her father, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the show. The show's smarter than that and more interesting than that and more complicated than that. And Shiv is no less an empty suit than the rest of them. You know, she has fully decoupled from whatever tangential connection she had to the real world and thrown herself completely into the Beast for no real end, I think, other than this abstract concept of power or proving herself to her father. And it's been interesting watching purpose slip through her fingers, because I think when we met her in season one, she had at least what the appearance of some insight, some political point of view, or some savvy. You know, she had existed outside of the company. So she, I mean, that's what the, Eves, the,
the
Bernie Sanders stand-in looked to her for, right? I mean, again, you could also now watch those episodes in retrospect and be like, another father figure was using her as a, you know, he thought that was delicious that he had a Roy, you know, the black sheep Roy family advising him, et cetera, et cetera. But clearly she had something. When you align yourself to Logan as the North Star, they're actually, you just tumble into space at that point. Everything you're holding is ephemeral and everything is about performance and positioning, et cetera, et cetera. And the emptiness of her current life was really striking, not only from her sort of Pyrrhic victories that happened throughout the episode, but also the other things that happened around them. For example, that kind of devastating cut back to the conference room where you see the three women in the cast in a like pre-filmed EPK talking about how Waystar values women.
Yes.
Down to the moment when we find out that Tom is tracking her menstrual cycle in order to implant her with a young Whamscam heir, you know, and once again, you know, from those she is supposed to love or supposed to love her, she's a object. She's a placeholder.
The previous episode, Kendall called her a dipshit. In this episode, Connor referred to her as a fake, I believe.
She has
repeatedly over the course of this season sought out some kind of partnership, whether it was with Tom when she was like, I love you, and Tom's like, that's nice. And when she goes to Lisa Arthur, played by Sanaa Lathan, who we haven't really seen in a couple of episodes, when she goes to her and is just like, I could use you as my counsel, as like an independent sort of voice. And she's like, I'm with Kendall. She obviously tries to kind of attach herself to her dad and get this this inside track to the top of the company. And the thing that Logan seems to reject most strongly over and over again is anybody wanting anything from him. So it's really like when Roman offers up Jerry, when Shiv is like, this is my board seat, when Kendall is trying to get what he wants, that's how you never get anywhere with Logan that way as a character.
It's worth asking a reframing the question you brought up at the beginning, which is the kind of tired question that is always, you know, hanging around the show like a dead cat under Logan's chair, which is, are these good people? I think a more interesting question for where we are in the third season is, are they good at anything?
Yeah.
Like, what are they actually good at?
Yeah.
The people who have survived within the power circle of the company are super good at eating shit. That's what they're good at. And pivoting and placating. We get glimpses of Roman being kind of good at some things, of being
clever
or charming or capable or efficient, or at least being able to use his rapier wit to cut through some of the bullshit. Kendall seems to have the right brain for business. He just doesn't have, like, he understands what's going on, you know, to a degree the rest of them don't, and seems animated by it, but he doesn't have the killer instinct, as we, you know, as Logan has often told him. What does Siobhan have? And I think there, what could be interesting about the show is that character heading for a kind of existential crisis, the likes of which we haven't seen on the show, and the likes of which would definitely not be welcomed by the Roy family, because, well, Connor is also, you know, completely out of it. He's delusional.
Bring him off the bench for like 5 minutes a game, and then he's just like, he just says something really funny and asks for a new job, and then is,
yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy that aspect of Alan Ruck's character. It is interesting, though, to think about Shiv and Rome, and Shiv and Kendall are the two characters that I think are the most, in some ways, ashamed to be Roy's, you know, like they want to be known for something either individual or something perhaps more ethical or moral than what the Roy family is typically known for. It's important to Shiv that her hands are clean when it comes to a lot of the DOJ investigation stuff. Kendall obviously wants to be this tech bro. Roman has no airs about him about that. You know what I mean? Like, Roman will blow up a satellite and be like, we'll fix this. Like, Roman doesn't have any shame. And that's why everybody in the room is like, well, Roman should get on the call with the president. He's Logan Jr.
That's interesting. And I think you're right. Something else that was really highlighted for me this episode, this has been there the whole time, but I was just thinking about it, was the generational divide and how devastating it is. You know, a lot of people spent their we don't have Succession this year, shelter in place year, rewatching The Sopranos. And so many of those people will remember kind of Tony's existential observation, right? That he feels like he got in at the end of something.
Yeah.
That it was something that was good when his father was doing it. And now it's really just picking up the scraps and, you know, shutting up the theater and locking it behind him. Like, it's over, and he can't shake that feeling. And that was a pretty powerful statement about the state of our country 20 years ago, before I think it became more actualized and real to everyone in their life, that maybe something is a little awry here and we can't quite put our finger on where and when it happened. All of that is a kind of a long preamble to say how old the older generation on this show is.
Ken's
don't get me started
40.
On
yeah.
how old our leadership in this country is, or the fact that casting older people in the older generation is partly intentional because Kendall is, because Jeremy Strong is over 40 and Kieran Culkin's actually about to turn 40, even though they play younger, et cetera, et cetera. But like, I sent this to you earlier in the week, David Rashi, first of all, been mispronouncing his name my entire life.
Me too. Don't worry about it.
Shouts to Google.
Shouts
David
to
Rashi.
Shouts to Sledgehammer. Yeah.
God, that show is important to me. Did you love that show?
I don't really remember anything about it other than the commercials.
I think that people listening who don't remember the kind of, it was this really satirical, like Naked Gun style parody of a macho cop movies starring David Rashi in the 80s. I loved it. Anyway, he's 77 years old.
No way.
Yes. He looks incredible. Yes. Isn't that wild?
Oh my God.
I know.
That is crazy.
Brian
How
Cox,
is, Cox.
He's 72 or something.
Okay.
I think he's only, you know, he's not that much senior to
but
Alan
he's
Rock,
got the urethra
crazy.
Of a 59-year-old.
and dropping or rising? Unclear. You know, and Peter Friedman, I think his name is, who plays Frank. I mean, these guys, they're in their 70s, right? Mm-hmm. And they are, it's this fascinating thing where, like in this country, when you have power, you're not going to relinquish it. That's just central. And it's also one of the reasons why we're a decaying empire. But also, they're still playing yesterday's game because it works for them. This idea that Siobhan is going to be like, yes, I'm the new millennial face of the fucking Brontosaurus. What? You know, that's why low-key one of the funniest things about the show always is when they talk about their plans of what they're going to do. They rat-tat-tat it always, right? We're going to buy this. They make up some new word for Google. We're going to do this. We're going to pivot to digital. We're going to blah, blah, blah. It's all nonsense. It's all shareholder placating nonsense, because what you want to do is you just want to keep mining coal, basically, from the back of your dinosaur like Fred Flintstone. Like, right. That's what all this is for.
You know, it's really interesting that you bring up the Sopranos thing, because I hadn't really thought about that. And, you know, there's a lot of conversations this season in the show where, you know, Kendall will say to Josh, like, the comet is coming, or the great whites are moving off of stage. Mm. That whole pitch that he gives the kids in his daughter's bedroom, where he's just like, we denationalize, like, we decouple from America. We decouple, yes, like, all the it's Kendall just stuff. Like, in the Sopranos, and I think up until, in a lot of ways, I would say some, at least in my experience, like up until the housing crisis in 08, where I think that was when I first became familiarized with the idea of that you could bet on something to lose, you know, like,
right.
Or that there were people who might profit from something collapsing, you know, and that those, that these moments of crisis were actually beneficial to people.
The capitalism may have incentivized a lack of collective spirit.
Right. And so there's no melancholy to this. It's like there's melancholy in The Sopranos. He's remembering like a country and a community and a way of life, even if it's, you know, debatable to what extent that was what he thinks it was. There's a sense of loss there. Succession is very much the antidote to that, because they're saying, you know, we actually see opportunity where everything collapses. We only see opportunity when there's crisis, when there's polarization, when there's anger, when there's perhaps we've basically talked our way out of this president. We'll get a new one, like all that stuff. And that's what Kendall kind of represents too. So Shiv and Kendall, they're not like white knights. They're janitors, kind of.
Yeah, and ultimately, it's not about the money. It's about, as they said in this episode, in relation to the president, it's about the access. It's about being inside the room. Like Greg is a punchline when he's still suckling at the same money teat. As soon as that is cut off, he's just a punchline.
Yeah.
He's just a loser. He's just a dork. And, you know, that was kind of the case with Kendall, too. At the end of this episode, I thought, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, when he takes the stage to try to milk, I'm sorry with all these milk metaphors. I really apologize.
That's okay. It's been an early day for you on the farm.
I've been drinking nothing but cranberry juice to deal with other issues, and I guess I'm eager for something else. when he takes the stage to do one of his now, you know,
his viral
performative
moments. Yeah.
Bits.
Yeah.
It rang super hollow. I mean, they were always hollow, but nobody was there for it. Nobody was interested in it. And they cut off his mic, and it's like, yeah, you had a moment when people were looking at you and talking about you. And if you cut that off, you cut off your access, you cut off the microphone, you cut off the money train. Like what?
Yeah. You think about how different that scene at the end of this past episode is shot versus the press conference. The press conference has all these people waiting with bated breath. The cameras are clicking. It's close up. Kendall has done he's surprised everyone. This is just like, I just want to come out. And then he's doing the most like the tiredest tropes of grandstanding and virtue signaling by being like, I'm starting a foundation. Here are the names we must not forget. It's just like, it's such bullshit coming from him.
The way, among the many pros of COVID, but like the one way that I think it has potentially helped the season is the way it causes us to view the bubbles the characters are in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kendall has his little bubble. He's got Jess and he's got the internet ladies to tell him he's doing okay and that he's doing a fine job, but it's
cracking
small.
A little bit though. You see Jess roll her eyes when the rabbit eats the bagel, and she's just like, this guy's an idiot. Like, and most people starting to think he is one, you know?
Yeah. I loved, it was a throwaway line, but when he was angry about the rabbit and he was just like, call our doctor.
Yeah.
Like that is such typical alpha bullshit. Yeah. Like his angry baby brain was like, you know, me put stick in fire. Like, right. I will show you fire. But it's like, that's,
imagine you're just being yelling that doctor and the two calls you get are for are about like a giant rabbit who's eaten a overdosed on bagel and also this guy's father who's gotten piss mad. Should we talk about piss madness?
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple questions. I didn't, you may have watched the episode more times than I have, so I didn't really track the TikTok of, Pillgate was confusing to me.
Sure. So she, Carrie, who's his assistant, like she's right. like, here are your pills,
right.
basically in the beginning of the episode.
A lot of no free ads, but Advil gets some shine this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And look, I don't feel like it's bad if you promote products you love. Like, I've been known to pop an Advil now and again. You know what I mean? Like, it is a magical elixir.
You know, like, you're not a Bayer guy? Do people take Bayer still?
I think as a blood thinner.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I, small digression here?
Please, I'm waiting. I was
like to find my way in to relate to these characters. And I guess what I was missing was the part where Carrie was like, do you have your pills? Because he did have some antibiotic or something for this UTI he seems to have developed by walking around in the sun at Josh's Island or whatever.
Yeah.
Unclear. But all I heard, the little like, you know, clarion call to my ears was Advil. Now, as I alluded, I have taken my fair share of the little brown guys in my life.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, it's anti-inflammatory. So maybe you've got a fever or something.
Two things you deal with quite often.
Totally. Here's something though. I don't know if this was getting older or the amount of running I'm doing now, but like the other week when I ran 12 miles and my legs were like, no, no, nope. That's it. We are on strike. We are done. We're going to cause you pain now. Should you use us? I was like, oh gosh, have I done something? Have I injured myself? And I was like, well, I'll start small, you know. Mm-hmm. So I shake the bottle, two Advils, dude. I was like in episode 3 of Dope Sick. When you use them the way they are intended to be used,
yeah,
I was dancing on the table like Dick Van Dyke at the end of Mary Poppins Returns.
What do you mean intended to be used, like in bulk?
No, just like
when you're in pain. Yeah.
I feel like maybe I've never actually needed medication before because I've lived a charmed and healthy life. But like I physically exerted myself and my bones and muscles were aching because they were inflamed. I took an over-the-counter medication and I was like, did the Sackler family invent this? I'm going to run 12 more miles. This shit works. So all of this is to say, I feel like they could have knocked out the UTI if they had given him 20 more minutes. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like don't sell that shit short.
Yeah.
That's my monologue. For
you're
this
basically here to stump for big Advil against antibiotics is what you're saying.
Ibuprofen, ubuprofen.
I just didn't know UTIs had that effect on older folks. That like, I mean,
right.
piss mad is a very evocative term.
Did you Google it? I wouldn't.
I did. I did, and I'm sorry
is
to say
that. Is your
computer
on fire now?
This is the last I'll be using this computer. I have to throw it in the LA River next. This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Sweat. You mean armpit tears of weakness brought about by poor deodorant choices? Say goodbye to that salty river that floweth from your underarm with Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Made for 24/7 sweat protection with daily use and an undeniable smell of cedar wood and lime. Giving you the confidence you need to quit your job, move to a remote island, and spend your days frolicking with dolphins. Old Spice Swagger Antiperspirant. Shop Old Spice now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So yeah, like I thought that that plot line was interesting too. They've definitely made Logan rather infirm these last two episodes. They've really started to lessen him physically, and you know, it was interesting watching Roman be the only one who was concerned about his health. Like Roman repeatedly throughout the episode is just like the most important thing is what Dad would have wanted, what Dad would say. What would Dad want? Don't go back on what Dad said. And then it's like, he's the fucking bull. You know, he's going to do, he knows what to do. And when everybody else is like, well, should we call and, you know, renege on this deal? He's like, how about we just care about like what's going on with him? It was kind of like it's so funny to watch them evoke these, or not even evoke, like pull these characteristics out of characters subtly, because they're happening while this three-ring circus of jokes is happening.
It's the saddest emotion for me in the show that at his broken core, Roman just wants more time with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And the saddest part hiding behind that already sad part is it's because if he had spent more time with him, he'd know who he really was.
Sure.
You know, like that's the trickle down that we see when Kendall's like to Siobhan, it's you now, you know, and I'm sorry. They were the heat shield protecting Roman without realizing he was being protected. And all that's left him with is this like giant maw of wanting, you know, and it plays out. I mean, every actor on the show is sneaky good all the time. But I would say this was a sneaky, great Kieran Culkin episode for what he had to convey while still being this affected character.
His physical discomfort at watching Sandy, his physical discomfort being on the phone with the president. That was hilarious. He was like, how you doing? And then he's just like, fuck. And then there's just that subtle, like after Siobhan gets kind of rejected by Logan at the end of the episode, he just kind of kneels down at his dad's side and is like, we fucking did it, huh? You know, like that was a close one. And it's, you know, you could track that in gender roles, but you could also just see like, he's the one who doesn't, his only concern is Logan in that sense. And it's not really about becoming CEO for him.
Let me check in with the concern troll under the bridge that we haven't jumped off yet.
What's up with him? Is he doing chin-ups and reading Ausgard? What's going on with him?
He's reading.
You should have a voice for this guy at this
weirdly,
point.
Weirdly, he finished My Struggle, all the volumes, and now he's reading Ausgard's new novel, which he has a lot of thoughts about. Have we done all this before?
Yeah.
Is there treadmill fatigue at this point in the show when I do believe part of what interests and motivates Jesse Armstrong is how cyclical and back scratching and back slapping and circular, like all of this is. It all just keeps happening again until it doesn't, right? Like I think we were saying this last week. I don't think he or anyone involved in the writing of the show is actually interested in what Waystar looks like after a succession has been enacted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not, to my eyes, and I could very well be wrong about this, I don't think there's a Kendall's finally got the big chair season. Let's see what he does.
No,
with it.
I don't think we're going to get like a lot of like, what are the suite of websites Kendall is unveiling?
It's about this feud that is the death throes of a media titan, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of individually and the company. So with all that being said, though, that sense of this is D-Day, everything is on the line today, and then it works out. Logan is infirm. Logan is unwell. He'll be fine with some fluids.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're off to the races again. I thought this episode was so, you know, theatrically and well staged. I am not, I want to be very clear, I am not actually voicing the opinion that I'm tired of it yet.
You're just a courier.
I'm just aware.
The concern troll's thoughts, he shared them with you and you're bringing them to us.
I guess what I'll say is I'm aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think the show is. I mean, what is Logan says, like, before he goes piss mad, he's like, we could have done this deal in Greece. You know, he says, like, they've been talking about this since the last third of the second season. Now, I think part of the reason why sometimes it doesn't always track is that I think there's a fair amount that's now happening in between episodes. Like, we aren't getting, like, after the first few episodes were essentially a 3-hour movie in terms of press conference. Second, you know, the third season starts immediately after the press conference. I think the second episode starts immediately as Shiv makes the U-turn to go towards Kendall's house. The second episode starts. So there's been no time in between. And now in this one, obviously, there's been some sort of fallout from Logan's experience out on Josh's island. And we don't really, I don't think we had seen or heard about negotiations between Sandy and Stewie and the Roy family. Really, that gets mentioned a little bit in the last episode, but it's obviously something where they're like, well, we're close to a deal. We're so close to a deal. I'm like, I thought you guys fucking hated each other and everything was coming down to a vote. So that stuff can be a little murky sometimes.
All the money that both sides have reportedly spent on whipping up a vote or, you know, trying to predict the vote. Also, the ATN's pivot to take down the president, that didn't happen overnight. I think you make a good point. One of the things that was that I remember noticing in the first season was that, I think Succession, to my mind, was really the first prestige era show since Mad Men to so fully take its time. I think that, I don't know whether it was Breaking Bad broke our brain in this regard, but there was, to my mind anyway, and it was also the nature of the story, but I kind of got lulled into an expectation that episodes were essentially picking up where the last one left off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the day or two has passed, but whatever the plot is so breakneck that we have to get right back into it. And I remember watching that first season where I was like, oh, now it's Thanksgiving. Oh, okay. And I appreciated that about the show. And I think that you're really right to point out that this is kind of a return to that type of storytelling. And I think it suits it, frankly.
Yeah, there's also, like, there are beats to certain Succession inter-character interactions. Like, every time Kendall and Stewie see one another, he walks in and Stewie's like, oh, I thought you'd be on a rainbow box talking about Time's Up. You know, he always, like, is you know, your dad's Sherpa, busts his chops for a second. And then Kendall's like, I can do this, man. And Stewie's like, fuck off. And then he's like, no, but you need me. And Stewie's like, good point. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, I don't really ever think, like, anything has been changed as much as these people are all trapped with one another. And maybe we're trapped with these people.
Yeah. If we ever get Arian Moyet on the show, there was a moment in this episode where Stewie's left hanging, you know, and you know, there was more script written. Cause like Stewie, I can't imagine a Succession script ever ends with Stewie, like, staring off into the middle distance. I feel like it's too great to give him something to clap back.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had to continually make these aggressive runs and pullbacks. You have to have Kendall had to have a reason to run into that room. And I actually enjoyed it more this time than in the past interactions, because there was such a sense of actual in their bodies chaos that they usually don't let anyone see, where it's just like, they're just shouting, you don't belong here. You don't belong here. You know, that
good
was
good day. It's like, yeah,
good day.
It was like, please leave.
I mentioned him already. I want to give shouts to Peter Friedman because I thought this was a great Frank episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a vamp.
I mean, just vamping like that. One thing I hope that Succession never does, and I think that they are just far too smart to do it, is we should never, ever, ever, ever go home with Frank or Carl or Jerry. Mm-hmm. Because that the whole point is that...
I don't even like knowing that she has daughters. Like,
No. It can't, none of this is worth it. And so if we see more plainly, like, the justifications and deals they strike with themselves, like if we see that Frank just, like, owns a building in the West Village and maybe loves the theater in his night off, like, and this is what he has to do all day to have his happy time, then what's the point? I think the whole idea is that you sign up for this, you jump on the merry-go-round thinking you'll take a few turns around, you'll grab the brass ring, and then you get to have a brass ring. That's just not what this is. This goes on forever.
So what would you What, are you looking for a solution in that regard? Or, are you, I mean, the funny thing is that we're only halfway through the season. I mean, I think because we talk about it so much and because we've been anticipating the season for so long, it's like we're only midway through, you know, so a lot can happen. There's still a couple of guest stars that have been announced that are showing up in the rest of the season. But yeah, like there definitely seemed to be some finality, like the blocking of Kendall on the phone, being like, you are now, like, now that we have secured this company, I no longer need to even think about this.
Yeah, in a way, this felt like the finale of the mini season that began at the end of last season. That there's a 6-episode arc that begins on the yacht and in many ways ends here. You know, so what I'm curious about is, what is the show now? Obviously, there are many things still in play. The rupture within the family still matters. The government stuff is now, I would imagine, ready to take center stage. But not to get too cute or too meta about it, but what is the vision for the company going forward?
Yeah.
You know, in this case, the company being the show. I thought it was really noteworthy, and I'm glad you circled back to it, that like the Kendall thing is performance. And was treated as such by Logan, who couldn't care less about the actual emotional fallout, needed him to be what he needed him to be on the tarmac or with Josh or as a foil or as whatever. And he secured his company. And now it doesn't matter anymore. So what is it now?
Did you necessarily believe the PR team when they were like, oh, this is actually playing really well? Or is it that's the actual...
To Kendall, his team?
Yeah, is that the sort of satire of that, is that even if it plays well, you still lose? Like the idea that these things actually have like an impact or these kinds of gestures can change anything?
I think that I'm on record with my thoughts on what Twitter opinion is worth. You know, I mean, that's... That they're scouring his menchies and being like, some people think that that was a good thing. Okay.
What else? What else should we talk about? I mean, Greg obviously losing out on the inheritance. I think we talked about that. Did you have like any thoughts about like Tom being like, I really want to like make sure the line continues and I want to have something to look forward to when I get out of jail? Because chin-ups and NASCAR does sound like a pretty cool vacation.
I mean, Matthew McFadden's performance is so good. And this sense that you get from it, that he thought he was in the penthouse and now he's just sliding down the side of a glass skyscraper and he can't grab onto anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal performance. It's also that deep feeling of like, what are we actually doing? What do we actually have and hold here? And for him, it was, you know, promotions and money and stature, but it was also, at least the way he imagined it, some sort of emotional connection. He was married, you know. He knows that Logan is very unwell, but he still takes the moment to relish calling him Papa. You know, he wants to have married into this family. And so it was kind of great the way that relationship has devolved so staggeringly that it's now even that piece of it is transactional. And Siobhan almost, you know, seems offended, but there's nothing in that suggestion that runs afoul of anything her family has done in the past. I mean, that's exactly how they think about all family transactions.
Yeah.
You know, that it makes total sense. I did want to, before we move past it, go back to the Greg thing briefly, just to say the constant underlining of people taking Greg lightly, not taking him seriously, telling him to like get some stones and step up. It's a pretty steady drumbeat, you know, and I only hope, and I have no reason to doubt, that when the writers do nudge him into more action, which seems inevitable,
sure,
that it will be as farcical as everything else that he does in ways that feel appropriate.
A la his congressional testimony.
I'm not really ready for, you know, him to pull off the mask and he's. He's Icarus from the Eternals. You know what I mean? Like ready to rain laser fire down on everyone.
I don't think that's coming. I think that's a guy. The inheritance thing is something I had sort of forgotten about. I don't really know that I had thought about like, oh, this guy is going to get rich off of his grandfather. I thought he was always just like, oh, this would be great if I could get a job or something like that. But it explains a little bit more about like his behavior, I think, over the last season and a half, if you know, he's kind of like maybe going to come into some of Ewan's money. We can wrap it up there. It was great talking to you, man, about Succession, as it is always. We'll be back on Thursday to chat about some other shows. We were produced by Kai McMullen this week, as always.
Do you want to make any more like piss mad jokes? Any other things you want to?
I think I said piss mad half a dozen times, and
you said it so many times.
You didn't. It's not like you cackled with joy. So I could maybe it was. I don't know.
Maybe missed an opportunity.
Do you have some piss madness in your like distant family that you want to talk about?
It haunts me. The family curse.
Uncle that's, Barry, the piss mad
what,
king.
That's what Dane Whitman wanted to say to Cersei at the end of Eternals.
You're still thinking about Eternals. Family. Is that yeah. what, like, is that what this is about? Is that where you're just mad that we're not talking about Eternals?
I want to make another run at that apple. I don't feel like I got it yet. You know, if there's one tortured, power mad family that is consuming me, it's definitely not the Roys this week.
I love it. Well, maybe we could talk more about Eternals on Thursday. Until then, Andy was...
Or not. Have a nice Sunday night, everyone.
Talk to you guys later.